From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Within just a couple of weeks of mass protests against racist police brutality, the once radical demand to defund the police has become a rallying cry, receiving mainstream attention. News media and politicians are now asking, what does it actually mean to defund police departments as a serious question? The Minneapolis City Council has already announced its majority decision to disband its city's notorious police department, a remarkable step. The city of Los Angeles became one of the first to cut its police budget, albeit by a modest sliver. But there is a debate over the idea of reforming police versus radically changing them. For those millions of Americans newly activated and accepting of the idea that Black Lives Matter, answering the question of reform versus transformation while interest is high is a critical issue. My guest is Rosa Clemente. She is the executive director of the Black Latinx Organizing Project, a producer and an independent journalist. She's based in Albany, New York. She was also a news correspondent for our program. Welcome back to the show, Rosa.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So there's been so many conversations, I know, in my local social circle, and probably a lot of activists are seeing this in their local social circles, people protesting for the first time proudly saying Black Lives Matter, and also asking the question of, what can I do? And so a lot of the suggestions that are being passed around from, say, Campaign Zero, which is a sort of reformist organization, but there are longstanding organizations like Movement for Black Lives, Dream Defenders, and of course, Black Lives Matter itself, that have had a broad agenda. How important is it for protesters across the country to seek out true leadership on this issue?
Yeah, and when it comes to this issue, really some of the forefront people have been the Justice Committee in New York City, Communities United for Police Reform in New York City, and the Justice League. So, you know, this is something we've been talking about as organizers for at least the last 15 to 20 years, you know, ending mass incarceration, defunding the police, abolishing the police state, and redirecting all the money that police get every year back into social programs that particularly uplift our young people, building new schools, ending food insecurity, and especially for young people, building new schools, ending food insecurity, and also getting the police out of the schools. So one of the first, well, Minneapolis, 2 days into the rebellion, the Minneapolis City Council canceled the contract with the police to remove now all police in all public schools, as well as all the University of Minnesota public university system.
So the existing leadership around tackling police brutality has for years been told that, yes, we need to reform police. They've seen after the killings of Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Eric Garner in New York, tons of money, millions of dollars poured into police departments to give them better training against implicit bias. We've even seen some stations try to ban chokeholds. There've been, you know, body cameras in California and elsewhere. And for those people who've been part of this movement for a long time, you've seen the reforms enacted and you've seen them not work. But for those people who haven't been paying close attention all this time, are you worried that they're attaching themselves to calls for reform, even though, because they may not know that the reforms have been tried and failed?
Well, yeah, and that's why the Campaign Zero things that they put out have to be severely critiqued. I mean, when you look at what they're asking for reform, they're asking for retraining, they're asking for more officers of color, they're asking for every state to implement body cameras on the state and local level. And we've known, and more civilian complaint review boards, and actually I was part of a group here in 2000 that after the Amadou Diallo trial happened here, we did start a civilian complaint review board in Albany that has been here for 20 years. And to this day, not one officer has been fired for brutality or killings of African American, mostly African American people here in the state capital. So the groups that you mentioned, though, like Dream Defenders and Mi Gente and Movement for Black Lives and the Black Lives Matter Network, have been put this as forefront of all the agendas. I mean, there's a 27-page document right now, a Movement for Black Lives, on what it means to defund and abolish the police and what are the policy prescriptions we are calling for. So at this point, none of us who are truly organizing within the context of all types of police violence, but the criminal justice system, we're not asking for reform. Reform has not worked. Body cameras have not worked. Cut 50, campaign zero, none of that has worked. And what we're saying now is untenable to even have a relationship with police at this moment, which is why there are certain groups, and including my new organization, the Black Latinx Organizing Project, that supports particularly the call from the Movement for Black Lives to defund the police and abolish policing as we know it now.
On Monday, the Washington Post had a very interesting analysis of police shootings over 5 years. The Post began in 2015 to keep track of how many people the police kill every year. This was when the uprising in Ferguson, Missouri began. And what they started finding was that they were finding twice as many police killings happening nationwide as the federal government was reporting. And that over these past 5 years, in spite of all the reforms, police killings are remarkably consistent. They kill about 1,000 people per year. And it doesn't matter what's happening that year, whether there are protests or not, they kill on average about 1,000 people a year. So it's really interesting to see mainstream media outlets highlight this failure of the reformist agenda, right?
Yeah, and in 2013, I was part of the group that put together a report that is now known as the Every 28 Hours report, where we gathered information that specifically focused on the African American community, men, women, non-gender conforming people, trans and queer. And what we were able to do with our little team, with no funding and just right going to public documents, is prove in 2013 that every 28 hours, an African American person in this country was being killed by the police. But the Washington Post and has done an incredible job, because they're also now including Latinx people, they're including Native American people, Asian Pacific Islanders, people with mental health. A lot of the killings we've seen against particularly white people come usually from a 911 call where a family member is concerned with their mental health. So the Washington Post will continue, obviously, to add numbers. And if people just look at the media in the last 3 days, mainstream and progressive media, there's a flood of new cases that have been ignored. The Breonna Taylor case, obviously, Ahmaud Arbery. There was a young man last week at a protest, a Latino young man that was killed in Santa Rosa. So now what we're seeing is that there are many more killings which we have known about, especially within the police brutality, the movement against police brutality. But now we're seeing, and if people think there's not more video coming out, there will continue to be more video coming out. But I think what has been good the last week in particular is that we're also now beginning to focus on what's happening to people who are incarcerated and dying also by the same police violence from the correctional officers. We have something that happened at the Manhattan Detention Center last week, where a man, his last name was Floyd, his first name I cannot remember, was tear gas and pepper sprayed 3 days before being his bail coming through. And we saw the brother in Tacoma, Washington, that his family called for help and then the police killed him. He was ha having a mental health issue. So we're going to continue now to see, You know, and I think a lot of lawyers are now, well, this is the time now to begin to release the video. And as many people said, we've known this been happening, but now there is video, and you know, there are so many now citizen journalists. And I do want to say something about the George Floyd killing. I think what we also have to be mindful of is that that's probably the only time that I've heard, as someone is being killed by the police, that you can hear the citizen journalists who were taping bystanders literally begging the police to stop killing him, that he was going to die. And I think that's also a reason why, because you had witnesses in broad daylight that were literally begging and asking the police, please stop it. He's going to die. And we have to think about those people that witnessed that and the trauma that they're feeling because, quote, they didn't intervene. How can you intervene when there's four officers that you know will kill you or taser you while you're trying to stop a man or woman, non-conforming person being killed? So I really want people to think about them, those bystanders, and the horrific attacks that particularly the 17-year-old African American woman who was one of the ones that taped has been getting for not stepping in.
Right, she's the one who actually recorded Floyd's murder. I can only imagine how traumatized she must be. I want to bring up one issue, which is you said that one of the things that Campaign Zero, which is the reformist organization that some activists have or some people who are newly activated have glommed onto, one of the things that they've said is more police officers of color. But from what I could tell, two of the four officers who were involved in the killing of George Floyd were not white. And we have seen over and over again in many cases across the years that there are plenty of non-white officers who are involved in police killings of African Americans and people of color. And we're also seeing the so-called liberal mayors of cities who might either be openly and avowedly liberal or also non-white, not do enough to hold police accountable. Muriel Bowser in Washington, D.C., and you know, and mayors like Eric Garcetti and Bill de Blasio in L.A. and New York. So I'm wondering if you can critique for us this idea that liberals and even people of color in positions of power and or on the police force is not enough of an answer, or and maybe not an answer at all.
Yeah, the LAPD and the NYPD are the most, quote, diverse police departments. The NYPD, almost 50% of their officers are people of color. And look at what that has gotten us. They killed Sean Bell. You know, they killed Akai Garley. You know, we can look at the 614 killings that have happened at the hands of the LAPD since 2013, and there was always an officer of color involved. So that's why we have to critique these reformist measures because, you know, as we say, like in hip hop, in the hood, like the only color they see is blue, and that's it. And that, you know, anybody who's thinking that more police of color is what helps, what we also find in our communities through anecdotes is that black and brown police officers usually end up being more violent than the white officer that they might be rolling with. Like, you know, it's a lot of like male energy, including that gets passed on to women officers, right? It's a lot of, you know, I come from this community, so I'm going to actually be extra brutal, or I have to prove as a black and brown officer that I have my white officers' back. As it regards elected officials, I mean, if anybody has seen me on anything, they know my complete critique of the Democratic Party. If we look at Baltimore City or Baltimore is a mostly African American Democratic officials. If we look at New York, de Blasio is a disgrace. He ran and saying that he would end police violence, that he would hold police accountable. A week ago, his daughter was at a protest. She was arrested. And he still decided the next day, along with the governor, Andrew Cuomo, to put 4,000 more police on the streets. And for a very specific example, where I am in Albany, New York, we have a woman mayor, We have a black DA. We have a black human rights commissioner. We have a black chief of police. In Albany, last week, when we were at a protest, they pepper sprayed us. They tear gassed us. They were throwing rocks from the roof of their police department on us. And they've been following activists around this city. In fact, Mayor Sheehan, a woman, put a tank in our streets last Saturday. So not only do we have to critique the local, Governor Cuomo, it's crazy because everyone outside of New York, and I would say, did he handle the COVID pandemic well? Yes, our state, as of today, there's been 35 people that have died. That's still 35 people. But he has cut every police reform that we've attempted. He wants to roll back bail reform. He has not let out one incarcerated person, even though he has incarcerated people making hand sanitizers, but those incarcerated people can't keep the hand sanitizer they're making for the state because it's considered contraband. He has not let, along with the attorney general, a black woman, they know that one of our political prisoners, Jahlil Muntakin, is suffering from COVID-19. He was released by the parole board on April 27, and our attorney general, a black woman, Letitia James, refused to release Jahlil Muntakin, who's now in a hospital and still suffering from COVID-19. And lastly, Cuomo cut Medicaid, and even in this budget, he not only wants to cut Medicaid, he wants to cut almost 40% out of the public school budget so he could reimagine education. But he also wants more than 5,000 new police officers on our streets. And he called in the National Guard and the military. And that's why we saw, unfortunately, that horrific attack of the 75-year-old Mr. Giorgino in Buffalo, where they pushed him and literally let him almost die while they walk by him. So for us, Andrew Cuomo is just as problematic and complicit in the state of New York around policing in the entire state of New York.
And we have a similar situation in Southern California. The very first black female DA, Jackie Lacey in Los Angeles, has refused to hold police accountable during her entire tenure. Black Lives Matter LA has been holding her accountable as best as they can with weekly protests and demanding and especially organizing around her re-election. She now faces a runoff against her challenger in November. And I'm wondering, Rosa, if you feel that it's important for those who are newly activated, who are maybe bewildered by where to pour their energy into, that they really should look to the leadership of groups like Black Lives Matter to see what they've already been doing. I mean, for example, in Washington, D.C., we announced on the news on Monday that the Black Lives Matter D.C. chapter denounced the painting of the street with Black Lives Matter as a, quote, performative distraction from the mayor's inaction and efforts to counter BLM DC's demands to increase the police budget and invest in the community. And then they did their own art by putting the words equals defund the police next to Black Lives Matter. I thought that was a very creative way to make the point as well. But it seems as though it's a good rule of thumb to see what your local chapter of Black Lives Matter has been calling for prior to George Floyd's killing, right?
Yeah, and I talked to one of the former members of Black Lives Matter in DC who has now moved back to their home state in Ohio. And the reason Black Lives Matter DC has critiqued it is because it's exactly what it is. It's performative, it's propaganda. The DC mayor has not only cut the summer youth employment program before the pandemic, has cut money towards public education, has put more money into policing. And if people see some of the footage of the brutality against Black men, women, and trans people in DC in the last couple of years, it's under her tenure. It's just like the mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Lance Bottoms, who is African American. She called in the National Guard. And then 2 days later, she said, "I don't know why this is happening." You
London
know, so,
Breed in Oakland, California.
yeah, you know, and I I would tell people that electoral politics is but one tool. But, you know, what was really heartening to see, it was when the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, went out to a protest and the people said, do you promise to defund the police? He said no, and they did a walk of shame. He literally had to walk out while people out of the rally while people were saying shame. So for me, I always go, we know what Republicans will do, but the Democrats, through their own policies and inaction, are just as responsible. Nancy Pelosi and Schumer come out after 2 weeks. Like, where were you?
So let's talk about
Trump. Like, I'm like, were you in the bunker with Trump? Because where have you been the last 2 weeks? The entire national Democratic leadership.
Let's talk about what it was that Democrats unveiled on Monday, the Justice in Policing Act of 2020, that would, among other things, ban chokeholds, establish a national database to track police misconduct, prohibit certain no-knock warrants, among other initiatives. Most of these sound like precisely the kind of reforms that have been undertaken at the local level in a patchwork way and have proven to not really make much difference, right? And probably implementing many of these will require more money and actually putting money into the police departments, which is the opposite of what protesters are calling for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah. And you look at New York and New York and California, chokeholds are banned. They are banned, and we still have had thousands of killings. You know, we talked about body cameras again. I think the one policy prescription that I would definitely agree with, though, is we do need a national database, because without it, that's how you have one police officer killing someone in one city, and then they move to the next and still get a job. We saw that happen with the officers who killed Tamir Rice, and in fact, the officers who killed Amadou Diallo in February 4th of 2000 in the Bronx, two of them actually became lieutenants and two went to the fire department. And we actually saw this in the Eric Garner case, right, where the officer who ultimately choked Eric Garner is still on the force. He's been promoted and now makes six figures. So I am not, you know, this is a people's movement. We cannot allow not only the Democrat Party to hijack it, we also can't fall for this propaganda performing of now all of a sudden officers are with us, they're kneeling with us, they're, you know, we got capitalist corporations like Amazon saying Black Lives Matter while they're literally firing Black workers who are organizing. They just put up a flag in Seattle, the red, black, and green flag, you know, the Marcus flag. And, you know, you're looking at that and you're saying, you're one of the most destructive companies, not only for the climate disaster, but you stay firing your workers who want to unionize. And most of those workers are Black and brown, but you want to say Black Lives Matter. So we have to be very clear right now on all that propaganda, but also with certain Black and brown visibly people that are visible, that live in gated communities, that are out here telling young people this is the right way to protest. And well, the right way to protest got us where we're at right now. And that's why young people of every ethnic group led by Black and brown people are in these streets right now.
Just to pick up on what you were saying regarding the police officers that have a history of misconduct, it seems as though many cases where people are killed involve repeat offenders. And yet, for example, the city of San Francisco is now considering whether to ban hiring police who have previous complaints filed against them. In any other industry, if you've been fired for misconduct, your career is over. You have to find a new vocation. But among police, you have complaints against violent cops, they might resign or they might get fired and they simply go to another city or another police department and get rehired routinely. It's not even banned that they shouldn't be rehired as a matter of course. So this is, you know, so many of these issues that are coming up now, but if have already been raised for years and years that people need to pay attention to. Finally, Rosa, I just want to ask you about the fact that while there are a lot of newly activated people who might be looking for something to do, there's also a new generation of young, radical, Black and brown activists who have seen, because they personally suffer the consequences of police brutality, who are speaking out, whose voices are being heard. I know you're a parent and your daughter is one of these young activists. Tell me a little bit about the hope that you place in especially young radical activists of color as the new generation of leaders for protesters to look up to.
Yeah, and I'm going to say, I just want to say one thing. Derek Chauvin has 17 complaints against him in the 18 years that he worked, and he was still, you know, on the force. Yeah, so, you know, I say because my daughter is out there and has been part of Black Lives Matter Kids and in her school, and she goes to a very progressive school called the Free School that encourages activism and organizing. When we say young people, like, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, my daughter's 15, you know, and what I say is we parent her well, but the movement raised our daughter from the, you know, it's crazy because I just found this picture. I think Alicia was 2 months old and we were at the annual October 22nd rally that happens in New York by an organization called Stolen Lives, where they stay there all day, you know, reading names of all these victims. She's now 15 and she's part of an organization here called Youth Effects that has led the last two rallies here in Albany. And it's as a parent, I'm extremely proud. Part of it is we have to also say, you know, it's important that people like us have our children, they're engaged, they know what dismantling white supremacy and they're fighting to save the climate. They're scared about their prospects for a job, you know, but it's kind of sad that my daughter does have to make and make a speech just asking that her and her friends get to live their lives.
Let's actually watch a short clip of Alicia, Rosa's daughter, my guest Rosa Clemente's daughter, speaking at a recent rally.
Speak on ladies being killed by the police as well. Y'all need to speak on trans people getting killed by the police.
That's right. Say it.
This ain't just Black men being killed. It's not right for Black men to be killed. But then again, it's not right for women to be killed.
Facts.
It's not right for someone to love who they love to get killed for loving who they love.
Right.
It's not right for someone who has self-love, someone that loves themselves, to be killed for loving who they are.
And that is a young activist speaking at a recent rally, Alicia, who happens to be my guest, Rosa Clemente's daughter. Rosa, I'm very proud of all the work you have done as well as a fellow activist and also as a fellow mother. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Good luck to you.
Okay, thank you, Sonali. Thank you for what you do for us, too. Thank you.
Rosa Clemente is the executive director of the Black Latinx Organizing Project, a producer and an independent journalist based in Albany, New York, and a news correspondent for our program. We've been discussing reform versus transformation of the police. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.